Read any good books lately? If you have, you may have noticed that the book industry is changing. Recent mergers and takeovers have shaped what kinds of books and writers are published, according to Dan Sinikin, author of the new book, Big Fiction: How Conglomeration Changed the Publishing Industry and American Literature. Dan is an assistant professor of English at Emory University with a courtesy appointment in quantitative theory and methods. His writing has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Review of Books, The Rumpus, Dissent, and other publications. Here he is to share five of his key insights.
Hi, I'm Dan Sinikin. I'm an English professor at Emory University and the author of Big Fiction: How Conglomeration Changed Book Publishing and American Literature. I started working on Big Fiction because I wanted to answer a personal question. I love books. I grew up around books. And as I've grown older, I've wondered, why do we have these books and not others? Out of all the books that people might write, why do we have these? Why are these the books on my bookshelf? I found the answer in the incredible transformation of the publishing industry. In the 1950s, publishers were relatively small and privately held, usually by the founders or their heirs. They functioned like big families built on relationships. That all started to change in the 1960s, when big conglomerates began acquiring publishing houses. Today, five large multinational conglomerates dominate the industry, sometimes called the Big Five. Big Fiction tells the wild story of the people who make our books and the inescapable forces that guide them. Here are five insights from the book. Insight 1. The author is a myth. As a society, we love authors. We love the idea of creative individuals using their imagination to bring great books into the world. It's seductive, and we're seduced by it. With the help of magazine profiles and biopics, and the great big machinery of marketing and publicity. But this isn't really how books are written. Our image of the author obscures more than it reveals. Philosophers of mind have argued in recent years that cognition itself, our very thoughts, are distributed and extended, to use their terms. It's a mistake to identify our mind with our brain and to think of it like a computer, calculating thoughts for us. Instead, our thinking happens through our bodies, our environments, and other people. Today's authors are embedded in a bureaucratic, optimized publishing industry. They work among agents, editors, marketers, publicists, sales teams, scouts, and subsidiary rights specialists. Successful writers internalize their judgments and those of booksellers, critics, and maybe even TikTokers. I say all this as an author myself. It's time we let go of the myth of the author. In Big Fiction, I show that letting go of the author doesn't feel like a loss. It feels like liberation. Insight 2. Contemporary literature starts in 1980. Scholars divide literary history into periods. Romanticism has William Wordsworth, Lord Byron, and John Keats. Modernism has William Faulkner, James Joyce, and Virginia Woolf. What period are we in now, and when did it start? So many features of fiction in our time are the product of the late 1970s and 1980s. That's when publishers elevated a few novelists to mega blockbuster status and made them household names. Think of John Grisham, Stephen King, and Daniel Steele, all of them still writing and still reaching bestseller lists on a regular basis. The 1970s and 1980s saw the explosive popularity of romance novels and the invention and proliferation of fantasy, arguably the two most important genres today. Just look at the massive phenomena of self-publishing, fanfiction, and TikTok. We didn't use the phrase literary fiction before the 1980s. It was in the 1980s that writers we now think of as literary began playing with techniques from genre fiction, which has become ubiquitous. Think of Cormac McCarthy's post-apocalyptic The Road, or Colson Whitehead's zombie apocalypse, Zone 1. We lived in a different book world before 1980. There are good and complex reasons for why everything changed, which I explain in Big Fiction. Insight 3. Daniel Steele is complex. I love Daniel Steele. I'm even a little obsessed. But I admit she's not famous for being a complex writer. Her books are considered beach reads, light and entertaining. This is neither fair nor accurate. The more I studied her, the more I came to believe that her novels reveal a fascinating dilemma brought about by the conglomeration of publishing. She was born Danielle Fernandez Dominique Schulein Steele. She had a lonely childhood living with her father in Manhattan. She attended an elite high school, fantasizing about becoming a nun. She eventually found work at a women-run PR firm called Supergirls, where one of her clients told her she had a knack for writing and should try to be a novelist. She wrote three modestly successful novels before an editor at Dell decided to make her famous. He asked her to write a novel based on a screenplay that was a ripoff of Eric Segal's Love Story. It was a huge success. That's when Danielle Steele became Danielle Steele. But it was a Faustian bargain. She became a brand. And to become a brand is to worry that your readers will forget that you are a human being, a creative individual, an artist. Ever since, the struggle between Danielle Steele the person and Danielle Steele the brand has been the engine powering her extraordinary production, a struggle played out in her characters and plots across almost 200 books and counting. Insight 4. Decline is a useful narrative. No one reads books anymore. The novel is dead. Publishers just want to publish celebrity memoirs and self-help books. If you spend time around literary types, you've probably heard these complaints. They are as perennial as complaints about kids these days. People have probably been saying similar things since publishing became an industry in the first place. The gripes took on their modern form in the late 1970s, when writers began to freak out about conglomeration. Ever since, narratives of decline have been linked to the conglomeration of publishing. But one group took these narratives and put them to good use. This is the story of nonprofit publishing, a movement that solicits donations from the government, private foundations, and individual donors to subsidize literature so it can loosen its dependence on the market. It didn't exist before the 1980s. The rise of conglomeration empowered nonprofits to leverage the narrative of decline to justify donations to their cause. Literature is in decline, but you can help save and protect it with your financial support. These publishers include Coffee House, Milkweed, and Grey Wolf, and they publish some of the great writers working today, such as Percival Everett, Robin Wall Kimmerer, and Karen Tay Yamashita. Insight 5. There is still room for the weirdos. I hear a lot of people complain that books feel homogenous these days. Like books all seem kind of the same. I don't agree, but I understand where they're coming from. Conglomeration has led to conservatism in publishing. Literary agents sell books and editors acquire them on the basis of comparative titles, or comps. You have to choose three successful, recently published titles that resemble this new one. Comps encourage a cycle where we just get more of the same. But even as conglomerate publishing was becoming more conservative and predictable back in the 1990s, other pathways opened for surprising books that didn't fit elsewhere. The biggest and most successful of these was W.W. Norton. If you were an English major, you probably remember Norton Anthologies, those big, Bible-like tomes full of classic literature. Norton turns out to be a really interesting company. It is employee-owned and the largest remaining independent publisher in the United States. Because Norton's college division is so successful, it frees it up to take risks with its fiction. Some of those risks paid off big time. It published Patrick O'Brien's Master and Commander, Walter Mosley's Devil in a Blue Dress, Irvin Welsh's Trainspotting, and Chuck Palahniuk's Fight Club, books that would have had difficulty getting published elsewhere. In recent years, we've seen a flourishing of small presses publishing really exciting books. I'm thinking about Deep Vellum, Dorothy, New York Review Books, and Transit, to name just a few. Despite everything, people continue to make amazing books. It is a good time to be a reader. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy Big Fiction.
Thank you, Dan. That was Dan Sinikin with five big ideas from Big Fiction: How Conglomeration Changed the Publishing Industry and American Literature. You might also like our book bite for Turning Pages, The Adventures and Misadventures of a Publisher by John Sargent. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.